Peace to the people. We are on the move from the nonsense and to the good sense. This is Mike Africa Jr. and this is the On the Move podcast here on the Black Love Podcast Network, where we illuminate the struggles of the people, inform the uninformed, and give you nothing but the truth. On the Move is here to disrupt the system and spark a global revolutionary change. A change is what we need. Like Sam Cooke said, a change is going to come. But like Gandhi said, you got to be the change you want to see in the world. And even though Gandhi wasn't perfect, he said something that was true. And when the power of truth is present, you better respect it. So, got two very special people in the house. They're actually in the building today. They don't need much of an introduction. They are Mom and Dad. Mm-hmm. What's up, Mom? How you feel?
Feeling pretty good.
You shining.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like when the sun hits you in the summertime and the beam, the sunbeam, you got that right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've gotten a lot of sun and a lot of cold air in the past.
I bet you got a lot of cold air. It's like, it's like minus 50,000 degrees outside.
Yep.
How you feel, Dad?
I feel all right, man.
Great. So, you know how this works. You've been here before. Activists are multifaceted. People don't think of us as doing anything other than rallying and protesting. But Gimme Two is a way of spotlighting some of the other good things we got going on in our lives. So, y'all ready to do a Gimme Two?
Yep.
Okay, Mom, go.
Well, let me see. Gimme Two. Well, one of my gimmies was when we came down last night and we was able to meet one of our dear friends' boyfriend who she wanted us to meet. Uh-huh. And we had a really good time. We played this game that was really fun.
Black card revoked. We played Black Card Revoked. That's right.
And it was really fun. And, you know, we got to take the dog out.
Oh, Dad's best friend.
Yeah. So I'm sure that's one of his. He loves doing that.
What about you, Dad?
Well, I was going to say that same thing, but that was last night. Tonight is the night. You know, we're back here again. So I'll say that's a gimme. As always, when we have dinner, Robin always makes me a special meal.
Uh-huh.
You know, with all my restrictions and all, you know, so that's always nice. There's a lot of warmth that goes into that preparation. So it's really nice.
She always got you covered.
Always got me covered, man. And I see my little granddaughter and grandson came down briefly, snatch up his grub and split.
Time don't play no games. Come downstairs, grab the food. Hey, grandma, hey, grandpa, where's my food? Okay, cool. Peace out.
Right.
Actually, I was going to say one of those too. It's nice to have dinner. It's nice to meet people and talk to people and connect, especially with our friends.
It's really nice, man. Really nice evening.
So it is Women's Month, and I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about that. Right. So like in history, there's a lot of women that's done a lot of amazing things. Right. And being that it's Women's Month, we should talk about some of these people. Right. You know, what's one of my favorite women in history? Harriet Tubman. When I was in school, I don't know if I ever told you all this. When I was in fifth grade, Rosa Parks came to our school.
No, I never heard that story.
And I didn't believe it was her because, you know, I didn't think that these people still existed in the time that we were living in. So when they were talking about Harriet Tubman, you know, that was 1800s or something. Right. They would talk about Rosa Parks in the same context. So one of the kids was like, that's Rosa Parks right there. And I was like, you're lying. I don't believe you. You got any women in history that makes you feel like all warm and fuzzy inside? Like, wow. Make you feel prideful, Dad?
Yeah. And they're close.
Oh, yeah. Who that?
Yeah, my sisters and my mother.
Talk about them.
You know, throughout my life, my brothers and I, she's the oldest in the family, and we depended on her even when we didn't know we were, especially when we were sentenced to that 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had small children out there, you among them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And anytime I needed something, I could always count on
Big Sis.
Big Sis. You know, not just that, it was the court cases. You know, she was always, her presence was always there fighting for her family. You know, not just the baby brother, but, you know,
the whole squad.
Yeah.
What about you, Mom?
Same here. I mean, there are women in history that I also looked up to, especially, you know, my earlier years. I always looked up to Martin Luther King's wife, Coretta Scott King.
Uh-huh.
I always looked up to Angela Davis, and I definitely would have looked up to Michelle Obama as the first black leading lady of the United States of America. Like, all those things always made me feel proud because I felt like they were our people. They were our people, and they fought for human rights, for justice. And so those people were always, like, special to me. But like your dad, too, I have my real people that I, you know, like my mother and my sisters as well. My mom is just, she couldn't do enough to try to do what she could to try to raise her children, you know, as best as she could. And, you know, I watched her. She just, and I probably have told you this before. You know, she had five children and she didn't really have, like, our father wasn't around. She would make sure we always ate first, and anything that was left over, then she would eat. But she would not eat until we ate. And this was when she was a little less fortunate, you know, as things went on and she were, you know, she started doing a little better as far as money and food and things like that. She, you know, she was able to eat with us. But I'll just will never forget that. I will never forget that because I watched her. Being an old child of mine, even being young, I had an old mind, mature mind. And I used to watch her when my brothers would ask for money. Ma, can I have a nickel? And she'd be like, I don't have a nickel. She said, Ma, it's right there in your wallet. She said, no, you don't understand. You know, I got
to
pay bills.
I don't have it to spare. That's what she used to say to me.
But it used to make, But it used to make me want to cry because I just felt like she was, and I watched her with just walking on the back of her shoes because she just didn't, you know, she just couldn't afford to even buy herself nice things at all. So she was always really, I held a special, you know, place in my heart for her because I felt like she struggled so much. And then,
but she still made do, still raised the kids.
She still made do, and she still made sure we had food above everything. Food to eat and clothes to wear. I mean, our furniture was raggedy. We didn't have like nice furniture. And in fact, me and Mike had a thing about that, me and your dad.
What was that?
It was just a funny thing because they were always talking about us, you know, but it wasn't.
They who?
Mike and Jimmy, but it was kid fun. You
Dad
know.
And his brothers.
Always, yeah, always talking about us. Y'all? Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I think we were able to fight because, I mean, verbally. Because
what? I don't understand what's going on right now. Hold on.
Listen, you know how kids are.
Yeah.
And especially the way we come up. You know, they start busting you about
things.
They
look
at
you. On you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, look at your this and look at your that.
At least my house don't have his camera. Furniture.
Yeah. And he talked about
my house got food in the refrigerator. At least my
camera. Talk about how cheap my camera was. I say, what? What about your camera? What about your old camera? You can't even take no pictures. And it was like, for me, it was like 1 to 10. But my sisters also, like my sisters, Gail.
What makes them like your heroes?
It's more so in recent history, but we've always had kind of a close-knit bond, but just because of the way they treated us when we came home.
You didn't expect them to treat you
it
like
wasn't
that?
So much, well, it wasn't so much of an
I don't know.
Expected kind of thing. Was more so like what they did do that I just didn't expect it to be like that. Like, it wasn't nothing that she couldn't do for us, anything that we wanted. Anytime you needed anything you want. Debbie, y'all want to go somewhere. Gail, you know what I mean? Mike, y'all need something. Pick you up from work. I'll take you. Whatever you need, whatever you want, you know, and you deserve it, you know. So it was that kind
Live
of
Live your best
thing.
Life and I'll help you do it.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah,
kind
I felt
of
that
best
vibe.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah. And Sharon was Sharon. She wasn't quite like that, but Sharon is just a fighter. Like, it wasn't nobody she wouldn't fight for. You know what?
I don't know if that ever changed.
Nope.
I mean, it was like that when I was a kid. One of my heroes, women heroes, is Angela Davis. I love Angela Davis. You know what's funny? It's like when you and Dad tied the knot, your name became Debbie Angela Davis. I never met her in person. When I do, I'm going to tell her that. I'm not going to tell her until I actually meet her in person.
I'll tell you somebody I would like to meet.
Who's that?
She was a little girl at the time. They was doing a psychological experiment.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. You know her name?
They never mentioned her name that I was aware of.
Okay.
And they were talking about the effect of bias education on black children. Every time they showed them a doll of a white child, they would ask them who was dirty, who was clean. It was two children. It was a black child and a white child.
Mm-hmm.
And all these black kids were saying that the black doll was the dirty one and the white child
was the clean
was the clean one. And they were identical except color. Which one was the criminal? Which one was, and they all picked the black child as being, you know,
some kind of derogatory thing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Until they got to this one little girl. And they say, well, who's the beautiful one? And who's the ugly one? And she did it. And so, I mean, she was defiant when she did it. She said, this one. And she said, and he said, well, why did you pick her? She said, because she's black and she's beautiful. She was five. Watching that thing, I mean, that thing was, it was bad. It made you feel so bad until you saw that little girl. That little girl made me cry, man.
Really?
Really. I was in a cell when I seen that. And I wanted to meet her parents.
Mm.
Because you know that.
They instilled.
Had to.
They had to.
And it's not just a thing of instilling it in them, but also putting that confidence in her because her parents weren't there when they was doing that testing.
Mm.
It's one of those joints you go to school and you're just given a test.
Mm-hmm.
That test was taken decades ago, but it was in one of those PBS specials or something. But I would like to know what became of that young girl, just to see whether, you know, that confidence and that pride and everything remained in her, you know, because I know she would have been something.
I remember you telling me about that when you saw it.
Yeah.
Did they try to change her mind, the people that were asking the questions?
It probably was a black psychological study to prove the impact of the standard American educational system when it doesn't. You know, we were just talking last night about the black card thing, of how black history was not taught when we were kids. You know, it was up to like certain teachers that came in with their own agenda, that they would put certain pictures on the walls and all that. That wasn't, you know, something that was coming down from the education board, you know, to do this. And I remember the one teacher I had, Miss Green, in Morton McMichael Elementary School. She was the only one that ever said anything about black history. The only one.
She's another one.
Yeah.
And I told you about my fifth grade school teacher, Miss Washington. She did the same thing.
In certain state, they're mandating that you don't teach certain things about
black history.
Black history.
Yeah.
About history, you know, and the history of America.
I was kind of surprised when Tasia said they still don't teach it. Well, we learned about the, you know, the regular black history, like different things, like Harriet Tubman, things like that. But it wasn't deep history.
Well, when they taught us about Harriet Tubman, they watered it down. Like, it was so watered down and mild that when I started learning more later, I was surprised that they actually even mentioned her name, actually.
Well, they just said, like, well, she freed the slaves. She freed these slaves and stuff like that. It wasn't like
Rosa Parks,
a detailed thing.
Yeah, no, it wasn't detailed. It was just like, yeah, she freed the slaves, this thing called the Underground Railroad. Yeah. That wasn't a railroad at all. It was more confusing than it was, like, comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that she was actually doing the things that she was doing when I learned more, I was shocked that they actually said her name.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They made a movie about, I don't know how long ago, but it was
some Underground?
The Underground Railroad, yeah, but it was so interesting. It was about her, and it was just so interesting. You just wanted to hear more. I wanted to see more and hear more. It was so amazing. Like, when I guess it was almost like Schindler's List. Like, they had those people, and they had, like,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they had people going through and, you know, people that just worked on it.
Something else that has been circulating, we talked about PBS. Mom, you're the hero to a lot of people, and a lot of people are watching your film on PBS. I Am Free, Now You're Free.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about that and tell the people what that is?
I Am Free, You Are Free.
I Am Free, Now You're Free.
Now You're Free. It's a film that was produced by Ashko Hua. It was really featuring both of us.
Uh-huh.
Me and you, and well, I'll tell you, it started out going one way, it went the other way, but it turned out really good because it featured the relationship between me and you, which your mother and a son, and the fact that I was away for so long, you know, like your whole life. You know, I had you in prison, you were birthed in prison, in a prison cell, and that I was not there. Although the bond was there because we were, you know, we were related, and we just, I wanted that bond to be there. And as you grew up, you wanted that too. But there were still missing pieces. The familiarity was missing. And some of the feelings that you felt as far as being resentful that I wasn't there, but also still wanting to have that relationship. And it was a very moving film for me personally, because I guess I was involved in it and I was one of the, you know, the main characters in it. It was moving because it really gets to the feelings and emotions, you know, of the truth and about relationships. And I'm hoping that being out there on PBS that people can really watch it and appreciate it. And maybe people who are in the same situation can also learn from it and learn that, you know, just because we have sometimes these broken relationships and ties doesn't mean that you can't use the strength that is in people, the resilience that is in people, to either nurture and patch a relationship or just use that to give your children what you didn't have, or give your children what you feel your children need. Be what you wanted your parent to be to your children. So, yeah, I was really happy with the piece once it got done. When I did talk to Ash, I said, you know, I had feelings that was, well, I was under the impression it was going to be one way, but it wasn't. And I was kind of glad that it wasn't a fluff piece.
Which way did you expect it to be?
Well, more like the romanticized version of a mother, son, and, you know, having in prison. And then, you know, we come
without
home.
The realness.
Yeah.
That there's issues between people that need to be dealt with and people work on them and
right.
And move beyond them.
Right. But yeah. Also grateful yeah, that you are trying to do that as a personal, I mean, for me, to you personally. And that feels good because it hurts when it, you know, when you don't have that or when you feel like, you know, your child is feels like you don't love them. You know, it hurts because you know how you feel. But what do they know? All they know is what they was dealt, the hand that they were dealt. And what can they feel? So I can't even blame them. Because sometimes you just, you can't get past the hurt that you feel and you just, you're blinded by it until that's resolved. Some people just can't get past it. So I'm hoping that that film hopefully can maybe kind of spark some interest in people, you know, spark some interest. And then the last of it where they're asking questions and, you know, maybe just motivate some conversation about it, you know.
Is there any highlights in the film that mom is talking about that are any takeaways from you that you know about it that you could share?
Well, the takeaway is that she survived. You know, in surviving, she always have a chance to heal and to heal that relationship that certain people were sure they had destroyed forever. You know, she had a chance to come out and be reunited with her kids in a way that she had never been before. You know, like I said, it's just a chance, man. It's a chance to heal.
Yeah. I hear you.
It's hopeful. I remember when we spoke at Rowan University and we spoke under the host of Professor Sandra Joy, and her curriculum was children of incarcerated parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we did speak there, we spoke about that and other things too. But after the presentation, what made me feel so good was there were young people, young because they were college students. So they were young. And they would come up to me and they felt like they were so excited at our presentation because they said that they had parents that were also in prison for various things. But hearing the things that we were saying coming from our heart, how we did do a feel about our children and, you know, trials and tribulations that we went through, they were saying things like, you know, it just made us feel like our parents do care about us. It made me feel like coming from your perspective, I can look at my mother or I can look at my father and say, you know what, maybe they do feel like this. And it made them have a newfound respect and a newfound searching for their parents to maybe there's a chance. Maybe it's not the way I think, or maybe it's not the way I think I feel that they feel. You know, so that's, it was hopeful for me, for other people too, for their relationships, you know, that may be kind of similar to ours or the same.
Yeah, I've gotten that. I've gotten people saying that they felt inspired by the relationship, the story, the experiences, the attitude. People ask me sometimes, how you doing? I say, it's hard to be better.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be better. Like the biggest things in my life that a lot of people probably thought would have never happened. I got, right? Y'all are home, mm-hmm. Great family. Rob is amazing. The kids are great, right? So what more can you ask for?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing about all of that stuff is, boy, it takes work. It doesn't just happen just because you want it to. It doesn't just happen just because you hope it mm-hmm. would. It doesn't just happen just because you think it should be that way. It takes work, right? You guys got any plans for the film? Do you like traveling and touring to different places and like getting to show the film and talking to audiences about what they just watched? Do you like doing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What do you like about it, Dad?
It's cathartic, man. You know, that's a huge hole 40 years away.
So talking to audiences brings that back?
So no, talking to audiences and the questions they ask and the conversations that, you know, the space we have for conversations and going over these things, you get to talk about things that you hadn't really thought about sometimes. Sometimes you don't want to touch some of the things that they're asking about.
Mm-hmm.
Or the things that they ask and that you thought about and you just didn't want to deal with, you know, because you see your children struggling with these same issues that they may bring up about and, you know, their own family experiences, whether their parents was in prison or not. So touching on them sometimes helps. Sometimes it just fuels some other regrets, some bitterness maybe.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, that you help resolve that for yourself and for others It's a good experience. Most of the times that we go out and we speak and they, you know, we answer these questions, you know, we feel good about the experience, man.
You know what I like about that part of it, the speaking in front of these audiences and all of that kind of stuff? Knowing that you walked on the beach for the first time in 45 years. Hmm. Knowing that you got to see a place other than a jail cell or other than Philadelphia, that you're actually getting to, like, live a life outside of the confines of, you know, what a lot of black people or poor people or people are subject to after 40 years in prison. That's the best part for me. I love hearing that. I love hearing mom say, I don't know what we're going to do. I guess we'll get in a hot tub. I don't know. Like, that's the best part for me. I love talking to people too. I love interviews, having those conversations and making those connections. Right. But yeah. Okay. Any plans, any upcoming plans you got going on? Any projects you're working on or anything?
A lot of people are talking virtual meetings now.
Yeah, we know? Are working on maybe some back to the universities again, trying to put together something that maybe we can get a tour. I don't know if it's a tour or not.
You want to do a Zoom tour?
Kind of like that because, yeah, it's virtual. Or even if we have to go there, yeah.
So you're working on putting together a tour. Okay, so for the people out there, my mom and dad are putting together a tour. If you want them to come to your city, hit me up and we'll arrange it. Okay, well, listen, to all of the women out there that are setting really powerful examples and to the people who are the unnamed women that are still setting good examples and working hard to keep your families together and bring about freedom and peace that we need in this life and in this world, I salute you. I work with you. I stand with you. And however I can support you, let me know. Mom, Dad, we could talk for a long time, but unfortunately, this one has to come to an end. Thanks for listening. Mom and Dad, thanks for coming to the show. If you like what you heard, tell a friend and help them get on the move with me. Leave us a review and give us 5 stars because we need to keep this movement moving. Make sure that you're following the podcast so you never miss an episode drop. Till next week, peace out. On the Move with Mike Africa Jr. is executive produced by me, Mike Africa Jr., and Tommy Oliver. Produced by Crystal Hill, edited by Masu McLemore, and made for you, the people.